Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to the podcast. I'm so excited to have this amazing woman with us today, who is an amazing performer. I'm going to let her tell you her story. Her name is Lane Moore. Just suffice it to say, she is you. She gets you. She performs about you. She's written about you. And we're going to talk about everything today about getting to your happiest place while you're single, all the way to developing meaningful friendships. So with no further ado, Lane, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I feel like everybody listening, we're already so on the same page. You don't even know it. Yeah, very excited to be here talking about one of my favorite things to talk about.
Well, let's jump right into it. Tell us, like, who are you and how did you get to do what you're doing?
Yeah, so, you know, I started off as a comedian and musician. I was writing for The Onion for a long time, and then I had always really been fascinated by relationships and love and how we find connection or we don't find connection and then feel horrible. And so then I created my comedy show, Tinder Live with Lane Moore, which is where we are swiping live through the dregs of dating apps.
Wait, what? Oh, what
yeah.
is that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, hold on. Hold on. So you're a comedian. You get on stage. You mm-hmm. open up your Tinder.
Yep.
And you just are extemporaneously swiping right on people.
Oh, no, no, no. Not swiping right on whoever. No, we're very specific about who we swipe right on, as we all are. But I always tell the audience, you know, it's the opposite of the way that you do it at home. Okay. So I always tell the audience, because I think the one thing when you're swiping through Tinder and you're doing a comedy show, the thing that people are often worried about or have questions about if they haven't seen my show are like, oh no, is it going to be like mean or trolly? No, that's not remotely what my work is. And this show wouldn't be so successful if that's what we were doing. Like, no, I don't think anyone would like that. I wouldn't like that. What we are doing is I always tell the audience, if we have a guy who comes up on the screen and he seems like wonderful and like kind, he has a good heart and like he seems dateable, swipe left, have a good night, bye. We're not swiping right on him because I'm not trying to ruin some wonderful man's night. We are trying to swipe right on, the example that I always give people is a white guy with cornrows whose name is Amen. That's where we go. And that is a real profile I have seen. So we're swiping right on just the craziest profiles, the ones that you see and you're like, what the hell is this? You know, whether they're just insane or they're offensive or whatever it is. And then I dive into that chaos. The audience chooses whether I swipe right or left. So it's super interactive. I match with them immediately on stage. I out-weird them every time. So it has a little bit of like a good-hearted prank show element to it. But really, I think, you know, one, I'm really proud that it's just unbelievably funny. Like, it's known for being like a joke per minute. Like, you'll laugh more than you have probably in months, maybe years. But also, there's such a catharsis for people because so many, particularly women, you know, men, if you haven't talked to your female friends about this, you don't know how bad dating apps can be for women. You don't know what we're seeing. And I think that's why sometimes when people hear about Tinder Live or like when men hear about Tinder Live, they're like, well, it must be mean because it must be just the most wonderful men in the world. And it's like, there's maybe two of those. It's like, it's so many more men yelling at women in their profiles and saying like, you better not be fat, no single moms. That's what we're looking at. So the catharsis comes from A, being at a comedy show with all these other women, all these other people, and seeing that you're not the only one seeing these profiles. It's not a you problem. They're just out there. This is what's showing up for everybody. There's no magical woman who isn't being forced to see this. That's its own huge thing. And then also having it being led by a woman on stage who is not seeing these profiles and like feeling the dejection and the loneliness and the like exhaustion that you would feel at home, but instead is like, oh, I'm going to make this good. Like it becomes fodder. It becomes catharsis. Whereas, you know, when you're at home, you're just like, this is draining me. This feels bad. But in a room full of people and I'm able to take it and, you know, just take it to such a fun, innocent, weird place where it's like, I've told the weirdest man on Tinder that I was like trapped in the woods and, you know, or that I was stuck in a can of beans. Like just, it's the silliest show, but it's so joyful because it's the most fun I think most of us will ever have on dating apps. It's not really a fun place. So I'm really proud that, you know, I'm able to do this show. I think the greatest thing too, for people who haven't seen it, is like men always come up to me afterwards and they're like, I did not know how hard this was for women. I didn't know this is what you were going through. So it's a learning experience. And also men who are like, I feel a lot better about my profile. And I'm like, you should. It just by doing the least, you're doing great. And then I hear from so many women who are like, oh my God, your show, like
validated.
Good. So validating. And also, you know, I do take opportunities on my show to really call out toxic things because there are some things that men are doing on dating apps that they don't know how they're coming off. So I always, always approach my show and my comedy from this place of like, I'm going to assume that some of these guys don't know how bad they sound. The ones that are like openly like racist, homophobic, sexist, like, you know what you're doing. You have no sympathy for me. But the ones where I'm like, they genuinely might not know this. So let me help the audience, whatever men are in the audience, stop doing this. And it's, so it becomes this like cathartic thing, this comedy show and this learning thing. So then when I, right after I created that show, I became the sex and relationships editor at Cosmopolitan and was doing work there for years. And then wrote my first book, which is called How to Be Alone If You Want to and Even If You Don't. So again,
love that.
Talking about, thank you. There's a lot there. I'll give you an overview and we'll dive in more. But, you know, went and wrote about that because it was just, there were so many things I wasn't, had never really seen being talked about that I wanted to talk about in this book. And then my second book, which came out a couple months ago, called You Will Find Your People, which is really a sequel to that book, because once you, and that's about how to make meaningful friendships as an adult, because, you know, once you get okay with being alone and finding some joy in that and some compassion and self-love, you want to make friends and try to make better connections. And then that is not easy. It's not easy at all. So I really wanted to write that book. And then I also do a podcast called I Thought It Was Just Me. So really just a huge through line of like talking about connection and loneliness and trying to have better friendships and better connections. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I have to ask the question with Tinder Live. Yeah. Did you ever get like the amen, the white guy with cornrows, or, you know, somebody with a dead fish and a dead deer who's naked? Did you ever make a meaningful connection with one of these people where you're like, oh my God, I thought X, but he actually turned out to be blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Here's what I will say. Not with anybody that especially heinous. It's never the ones who are like that bonkers, but I will say, one of my favorite things that happens on Tinder Live is there'll be a guy whose profile is like really goofy. You probably wouldn't swipe right on it. Maybe you would. It's one of those things that I think a lot of women see. I feel like this happens less with women's profiles where you're like, this guy could either be funny or he's insane.
Bananas.
And I don't have the time. Right. Yeah. I don't have the I don't want to find out, really. I don't want to those odds aren't good. And I think so many women have done the like, maybe he's joking and he was not joking. We don't want to deal with it. But on Tinder Live, I'll jump down that rabbit hole for you and find out. So one of the coolest things is sometimes I jump down the rabbit hole because someone's got a real weird profile and then the guy's actually cool. And I had, you know, relatively speaking, but I actually had one show, maybe my favorite memory of this, where the guy was actually like kind of great. And several women in the audience were like, will you hook me up with him? And I was like, totally. And he ended up dating like several of the women in the audience and it was really good. Like, so it ends up being a connector. It's, you know, which I just think is magical, but that does happen sometimes where people are like, you know what? I like that dude. He's weird, but in like a really fun way. Will you give him my number? And I'm like, sure, sure. I hope you end up together. And you know, there's like people who will meet at Tinder Live shows, or it's just, so it ends up being more of a connector than I could have thought, even with the weirdest profiles. Yeah.
That's hilarious. Okay. I just had to go there. I was like, God, did you ever date any of these guys? So funny.
Oh, I know people ask that question a lot. And it's so funny because in the early years of the show, I've been doing it a long time now. And people would say like, you should go out with that guy. And I quickly learned the answer to that is no, you should not. Because here's the thing. They're getting to know me on the show as a character. I'm playing somebody who's playing into what I quickly realized on dating apps, what a lot of these guys want, which is somebody very young. And I don't mean that to catch a predator way, but just like malleable, maybe brain damage, something's wrong with her, kind of drunk, super horny, like just this kind of like, what? I don't know. Like, so any man who likes her is not going to like me, an outspoken person with needs and a soul, and you know, they're not, it's them connecting to her, even if it's as a bit, says something, I think.
Right, totally.
You know, so there's a bit of social commentary in a fair amount of social commentary in there as well about what a lot of guys on dating apps want. And it's not necessarily somebody, like when I was myself on dating apps, when I was funny and I had a perspective and expectations, I had a very different time on dating apps. That's what I will say. Yeah.
Interesting. Right. Because your perspective changes in the perspective you have now. And especially when you're on stage, you're looking to be lighthearted and find the humor and the absurdity in it, which kind of makes it more fun.
Which makes it so much more fun. But yeah, the experience of when you're like, no, I actually want to find love. I want to find some kind of connection, even if it's not forever, is so much heavier, so much more vulnerable, so much more rejection. And, you know, so by being able to do this, it bypasses all of that and also really, really ends up validating like how awful it is when you're doing this for any other reason, that this is what you're seeing. If you're in a vulnerable state and this is what you're seeing, so much less fun.
Totally. Well, let's jump to how to be alone.
Yeah.
Whether you want to or not. And I think so many of us are in that situation, whether we're, you know, so give us your best, you know, new year, new me. Like, how can I enjoy this phase of where I am right now? Because, you know, smart daters, you are psychotically optimistic because you listen to me, which knows that finding love for you all, including you, Lane, it's a when, it's not an if. So we call it being psychotically optimistic. You are optimistic no matter what. The, you know, guy with the deer antlers who's, you know, on a sled and kooky, there's a great one out there for you. And you, someday you're going to go on your last first date.
Yeah. And maybe it's the deer. Maybe he ends up with the deer.
Exactly.
Someone for everybody. You know, so the first thing I want to say, because it feels important to say, is a little bit about what How to Be Alone is about. Because a lot of the books about being on your own, this is a very different book from those, and very purposefully so. So How to Be Alone, not only is it about, like, a lot of it is also my story with being alone, which was very heavy. And I say that because I bet a lot of your listeners have a similar story.
Let's go there.
Yeah, I did not have the perfect family that everybody is told they are supposed to have and that everybody but you has. When I wrote this book, it was a few years before Jeanette McCurdy's book came out and all these books that came after, where people were absolutely not talking about having challenging families or familial estrangement. And so I really want to talk about that, because I was frustrated with a lot of the books that I read about struggling with connection and loneliness. Every single one of them came from a perfect family. Oh, I come from a perfect family and my parents were married for 90 billion years. And why can't I find anybody? I'm like, that's
you. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Like, that's fine that that book exists, but that should not be the only person we're hearing from. And it felt so alienating to me, because I was like, it is so much different. It feels so much harder when you don't have a model for romantic love. You don't have a model for love at all. That is our earliest, most formative relationship. That is our model for our self-worth, everything. So you are starting from negative zero. And I had never heard anybody talk about that. So I talk a lot in that first book about my own story with that, my own feelings of like, God, how do you do this when you feel like you're so different and you didn't get what you're being told that everybody but you got? Where is a space for us? And fortunately, because when I wrote it, and I'd never seen really anybody talk about this and say this was their story, I was terrified, genuinely terrified, because I was worried people were going to be like, what is wrong with her? I had a great life. She's crazy.
No.
But I didn't know, because no one had ever said it really that I had seen. But I got to tell you, the letters I still get every single week from people who are like, I thought I was the only one until you said it. I didn't know. So the weight I was feeling is the weight so many people felt. So I just wanted to touch on that a little bit before I go into my advice, because I think it's just important for people to know, because I know if I was listening to this and I didn't know where Lane was coming from or whatever, I might be kind of hesitant, like, oh, great, here's another person who's never struggled ever, who's going to tell me how to have self-esteem. Because I can't tell you, and I'm sure you've seen as well, how many times I see people who are like, yeah, I wrote a book about having, like, not giving a fuck and like demanding more. And I've always been good at that. So I don't want to hear it from somebody who's always been good about it. I want to hear it from somebody who has fought their whole lives to be better, who has done the work, who's done all this shadow work. I don't want to hear from somebody who's never struggled. You shouldn't be giving advice.
Right.
You know, so I just wanted people to know that. So I think one of the biggest things, and also because the advice will reflect that, because there is no like, just do this and you're fine. I hate advice like that. It's not what I do, and it's not what I believe in. I really think so much of it starts with accepting who you are and what you need, because especially those of us who were different, especially those of us who were the black sheep in our families, those of us who were bullied really badly as a kid. I'm really just listing a checklist of my own personal things, but like any type of othering, so many of us, no matter how much we think we have that self-love, it's so hard to heal that when that was your imprint as a kid. So really just accepting who you are, what you need. You know, I talk a lot in How to Be Alone also about attachment styles, and learning about that was really big for me. So I didn't like the very clinical way that it's often explained, in a way that didn't really make sense to me, until I was like, okay, well, let me see this throughout my life and kind of translate it in a more accessible, less like 37% of participants. Like I can't read that stuff. I'm too bored. But anyway, once you realize like, oh, this happened to me, so then I need this. Then you start to look at it less like, oh, why can't I just be chill? Why can't I just be normal? Why can't I just be cool with whatever? And I am such a big proponent of people, especially women, but I mean, honestly, everybody, because, you know, men are told to have no feelings at all. So of people not being chill and people not being this idea of this cool person with no feelings who's down for whatever. I want what I want. I'm a big time hopeless romantic, and I have really big feelings, and I want vulnerability and all these things. And, you know, so much of this world will tell you that's too much, but I really believe, like, the right people will be like, oh, thank God. Thank God you're not speaking exclusively in sarcasm. You're not afraid to label it. You're the right people will be like, oh, hell yeah, this person's very real. There's no facade they're putting up. Finally, you know, so I think a lot of it is realizing, you know, and also what you had said as well, where it's like, there is somebody out there who will just be so stoked you are the way that you are. Even with all the stuff you feel like it's not okay to need, the right person will be like, yeah, I can give that to you. That's not that hard. I think most of us think we have too many needs. We require too many things. And it's just really not true. The right person will not see that as this insane heavy lift. Like if someone loves you, like there's not, you know, oh, you need a little more reassurance from me sometimes. Okay. I think that's a lot of it.
I love that. And it's so important. And guys, even if, you know, like Lane said, you know, nobody, I'd like to think doing what, and I can tell you with certainty, Lane, doing what I do, nobody has that happy birds chirping family background. Nobody, not me, not anybody at the end of the day. And so I think I love that you're normalizing that and talking to it. And even when you do your work, right, you can do the therapy, you can read attached, you can do all of the things, but really, I love what you said. Accept who you are and what you need. If you need a lot of reassurance, if you need somebody who thinks you're the bee's knees and tells you that all the time, that doesn't make you weak. It's just who you are. And find someone who's going to give that to you.
Yeah, because that's what self-worth is. I think a lot of the times we think that we have to fit into, you know, I specifically go into a lot of the very gendered messaging that we get to in that first book, where like men are told, okay, I have to just be no feelings at all. I can't like certain colors. I have to be like this. The woman wants me to do this because men are this. And women are going, okay, I have to be a certain size. I have to have all my problems figured out because I can't have any drama, no daddy issues. Like we're all chasing these very gendered, regressive ideas of what we need to do to earn self-worth. But self-worth is something you can give yourself. It took me so long to realize, like, oh, you'll gain self-esteem not when you check off 50 boxes of like, okay, I am a sufficient woman now, a sufficient man, whatever it is. You gain it once you're like, oh, this is good. All this is good. Even if the people around me are telling me I'm this, I'm that, ditch that person. Don't ditch yourself. That's not what needs changing. You know, ditch the people around you who are making you feel like you should change. That's just such a red flag. If there's somebody who's constantly telling you need to change, like that person probably needs to do some work on themselves. Why are they friends with you if you have so much fixing that needs to be done? There's a lot there, you know?
Absolutely. We tend to project all of that onto other people.
Right. I'm just like, you don't sound very healed, because I don't, if I have a friend who I feel like we're that incompatible, I don't tell them they need to change. I tell them what I need. If they can't meet that need, if they're not compatible, have a really nice life, like in a genuine way.
Yeah.
Like, please find who's right for you, and I'll do the same. And, you know.
Absolutely. I love that. And anything else you want to tell us about, you know, being alone and being good with us?
Yeah, I When I started writing How to Be Alone, I did not yet have a dog. During the process of writing the book, I got a major foster fail. I thought I was just going to foster this dog and she changed my entire life. Her name is Lights, and I write about her and finding her and how much she changed so much for me about being able to connect with people. I mean, Lights was without question, like the healthiest relationship I'd ever had, the safest relationship I'd ever had, where I was like, oh, I'm able to like genuinely attach to this animal in a way that I have not really found with people yet. And it made me be able to find that with other people because I realized like, oh, there is somebody who like doesn't suddenly change or it doesn't have some secret plan or doesn't secretly want something to be, even though I projected all that onto this 8-pound rescue dog that I was like, what does she want? She's being really nice to me. What's her game? And it's like, but that's how.
What's the motive?
Right. What's your motive? What do you want?
A treat, a pet. I just want you to love me.
Loved me immediately and never stopped. I had, what the hell is that? And so, you know, I write about that a lot in that first book. And then, well, it's funny because in You Will Find Your People, I actually ended up taking my author photo with my dog. Cause I was like, I'm doing it. She's my people, but I've heard from so many people who have like heard about my relationship with Lights and have adopted pets, and it has radically changed their ability to connect with people because I think it's for so many reasons. So I want to tell people that, because if you haven't done it yet, I recommend it to people probably every day. If you can, if you're at a place where you can do that, having that companionship, because look, we all need to have physical affection with somebody. So many of us do not get that unless we are partnered. And that's so criminal. Like Lights and I fortunately have a very cuddly dog. We are constantly cuddling and she's curling up next to me. And I'm like sharing that connection. Even if it's with an animal, a lot of times we, you know, our society tells you that's like really sad or really I'm struggling not to really curse, but that's what I was just thinking.
You
there,
can curse. It's
okay.
Fine.
Yeah, I was just like, fuck off. Like, this is, why are you saying this? Like, I just want people to find connection wherever they can. If you find it with an animal, you win. Any love we find in this life, in this very hard life, like, you win. There is no like, it has to be your married partner. It has to be this like. It's different for all of us. So yeah, I really encourage people to, if you have a connection with your animal and you're like, is this sad? I'm going to be some cat lady or whatever. Screw that. That is all such
buy a pet.
Nonsense. Yes.
Buy a pet. If you haven't experienced healthy, happy love, unconditional love, buy a pet. I love that. So
especially if you, I mean, you know, it's a cliche, but it's a beautiful one, I think, where like, especially if you get a rescue animal, you really are rescuing each other. That's somebody who like was abandoned or didn't have what they needed. And you know what? A lot of us have been abandoned and didn't have what they needed. So you kind of find each other in this lovely way. Yeah.
I love that. So Lights really opened your heart.
Oh God. Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. I did not know. And you know, again, that I think we learn worthiness, and even having an animal who looks at you like, God, I love this person. She's the best. Like so many of us, if we haven't experienced that kind of, and like unwaveringly so, not sometimes, and then sometimes they're mean to us, you know, but just eternally, consistently. I mean, you know, honestly, even few humans can give it that consistently, I think, because humans are complex, even the good ones. So but just having that really, I think, so helpful to people where it's like, oh, I'm worthy of that. Really? Okay. I believe you.
I love that. You've opened my eyes. I knew pets were great. but I don't have one. I have two teenagers and, you know,
that's fair.
My shoulders are only so broad and a husband at the end of the day. But I can see exactly what you're saying and the unbelievable benefits of having that healthy, consistent, unconditional love and attachment and how that can calm your nervous system and give you so much and build your confidence that it's okay to get out there and date, because even if the date doesn't go well, I'm going to come home to someone who's just excited to see me, whether it's 3 minutes later when I go pick up the mail or 3 days later.
Yes. So much. And especially, you know, I have read like studies and things like that. And it is like scientifically proven that there are so many people, especially people who've gone through trauma, who that is where they're able to help repair, because people have not really been safe or consistent or whatever they needed. And it's really hard trying to, if you've been hurt that much in that way, to just keep hoping the next person doesn't hurt you like that. And you know who's, I would say, completely unlikely to do that? Your pet.
I love
that. To hurt you in that way or be manipulative or want something weird from you, you know, and that's such a gift. Yeah.
That is really a gift. Well, let's go into, this is all such amazing information, Lane. I'm literally, I can feel my own molecules changing inside of me. So I so appreciate your authenticity in talking about this. And let's go on to forming adult friendships. And that's something we, you know, everything I've been reading lately, it's like we're in a loneliness epidemic. We're more connected than ever, but we're more effing disconnected than ever. How do we do this as grownups that don't have, you know, college dorms of people to go make friends with?
Yep. Yeah, we don't. And it's, you know, so much of writing this second book was seeing, you know, again, I think as somebody who struggled with these things and all the friendship books, all the stuff we see on TV, like everywhere you look, if you want to find like a guide to making new friends, you like can't, because all you're going to see in books and TV is like, well, you meet them when you're five. That didn't happen for you. Well, I don't know. I think you're screwed. What? Are you kidding me? That's so insane. And you do, you feel like, so that's why I wanted to write this book, because I knew I was not the only one who didn't get lucky enough to meet everybody at 5 years old or 18 or whatever. Like, we're told that we have these cutoffs. You better have met them by then. And we're also never, ever going to talk about friend breakups. We're never going to talk about that. And then even if you had that person you met at five, what if you get to be 25 and they're not a good fit anymore? And most people, because we're told that's there's a cutoff, you better do it by then, you better have all your friends, and we're told it's bad to break up with a friend, so many people, most of their friends, they don't even like them, but they hold on to them because, well, we've known each other since we were five, or because they feel this pressure to appear online and be like, look at my girls, or like, look at my boys, yeah, it's definitely like these people. But they don't feel seen. They don't feel
accepted.
They don't feel like they can be who they really are. They're having these surface level friendships. And for better or worse, I am incapable of like kind of surface level bullshit friendships. I'm incapable of it. And I say for better or worse, because I think most of the world is doing that and feels very hollow. But when you're not capable of doing that, you almost feel like, why can't I just do it for show? Like these people, why can't I just do it for Instagram? I cannot do it. I know how toxic and crappy that is. So then you just feel lonely. You know, it's just two different types of loneliness. And I don't think either one of them are good. But, you know, one of the biggest things, so it's so many things, but I talk about in this book, attachment styles for friends, because I had never seen that talked about. I had only seen attachment theory as it pertains to romantic relationships. And from writing about attachment theory in How to Be Alone, I started to realize, oh my God. So I have, an anxious, secure attachment. And I'm very proud of that because it used to just be anxious. But I've had every attachment style. I've been avoidant. I've been anxious avoidant. I've had all of them, which is why there's a lot to say, and I can speak to all of it from a first person perspective. But also I realized, oh man, for so many years, I was an anxious person attaching avoidant romantic partners and avoidant friends.
Totally.
It's not just romantic.
100%. You know, this is so interesting. Doing what I do, we're very into attachment. And this is how we help steer the majority of our clients who flop between anxious and avoidant into people that are actually good for them. So my kids, Jaden and Max, have grown up around attachment and red flags. And so I remember during COVID taking a walk with my daughter, and she said, you know, I finally met my best friend, like my person. But you know what? I know she's avoidant, and I know that she will leave me someday. And you know what? 2 years later, she did ghost my daughter out of nowhere. And it was probably the most painful thing that has ever happened to her. She started having panic attacks in Walgreens. And it was, what's so interesting though, is she knew. She predicted this in 2020, but when this happened in 2022, did it make it easier? No. It did not.
Yeah.
Did not. She's had boyfriends. None of them were as painful or as profound as that ghosting.
I know.
And I want to punch this girl in the face. But she who shall not be named.
Yeah. I mean, well, so, oh, there's so many things I have to say about this. One of them is that there's literally, I talk a lot about friend breakups in You Will Find Your People. And I specifically talk about dealing with the pain of somebody leaving without warning, like a longtime friend ghosting you and not saying goodbye, because it is something I have experienced, and it always is. It always is that avoidant person. You hoped.
Even when you knew.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And I exactly, like, absolutely talk about, like, yes, this does hurt more than a romantic partner. And like, why does that hurt more than a romantic partner? And that kind of validation, because when you're experiencing it, you almost feel dramatic. Like, why does this feel so devastating? And I've gone through that cycle so many times, and it doesn't feel, anybody who tells you like, eventually it stops hurting. No, it doesn't. It never does. Especially if you already had abandonment issues. And especially if, and I don't know the situation with your daughter, but in most cases of when they do that, we did not even do anything. We did not even do anything wrong. There was no big, like, well, she did this. Because, you know, I have had to have a couple friendships where I kept asking for what I needed. They wouldn't give it to me. I kept asking for what I needed. They wouldn't give it to me. Those eventually, I absolutely do believe that you have to, quote unquote, ghost, because you cannot just continue to ask for what you need, be rejected, have them not give a shit that you are not getting what you need, even though they are. That's so unhealthy. Please walk away. Know that you tried. That to me is not ghosting. You don't need to do a, like, as you know, I have tried. You don't need to do this letter. However, the people who leave when, like, you didn't even try to talk to them, they don't even know what they did wrong. The pain of that on the receiving end, no one deserves that. No one.
No one. No one. No one. And what you're saying is so right. Once you have asked multiple times for what you need, and that person continues to not do that, it's okay to say, to have that breakup and say, you know what? I think I'm going to be better off. I think we should put this on pause for a while. Or say what you mean what you say, and let it go. But just pulling the plug on something with no prior warning, whether it's romantic or non-romantic, it is horrible to
do. It's like inhumane. I really think it is inhumane. No one deserves that.
Well, exactly. And daters, I'm not talking about just, I want to clarify. It's not like you're texting with somebody back and forth and then they say something weird or red flaggy. No. That's not ghosting. We're talking about existing relationships. And that does not include someone you've been on two or three dates with. It's always nicer to say, hey, you know what? I enjoyed meeting you, but I feel that this isn't a romantic connection, but I wish you the very best. Something like that. You never just have to plumb disappear. There are times where you might, but again, we're talking about established relationships, Lane and I. So don't get confused. Well, what should I do if someone has a red flag? We're not talking about that.
No, it's not that, because, you know, and that's why, you know, I think that's why we're both trying to be like extra clear, because there are like, I also, you know, for context, I tend to be somebody who like over communicates, over explains. And sometimes in the beginnings of dating or whatever, I was like trying to make them a different person instead of just leaving, when it was just like, no, they've already hurt you. They've already like shown you who they are. You can walk away. You don't have to, because a lot of times when people who are wired, like I am wired, I think a lot of us are, when we're doing our like exit interview where we're like, you know, I think I'm just going to blah, blah, blah. We're kind of doing it because we hope they'll change. We kind of do. And a lot of the times people will use that open door for manipulation. And that's when I recommend ghosting, when you know this person's going to be like, oh my God. Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, no, I've seen what I needed to see of who you are. It's not my deal. I'm not going to give you another opportunity to be like, oh my God. Yeah, totally. I'll do it. And then you're not going to do it.
No,
it's just who you are. And that's fine.
Absolutely. So who should we bring into our lives? How do we have meaningful relationships? Pruning and getting rid of people is an active part of that, right? If somebody brings you down, it's time to reevaluate, right? Like you're saying, if you got the Instagram, woohoo, these are all my friends, but you feel empty and hollow and unseen and like you're playing small, those aren't your friends. Now, I'm not advocating that you need to ghost all of them. We're saying, how do you make meaningful connections? Those decisions, dear listener, are yours to make about who stays, who goes, because there are certain people you might have to keep around, right? Your neighbors, moms from school, whatever it is, right? You know, people from the past, your kindergarten besties, your high school friends, whatever it is. We're not saying you need to be merciless and the world is full of zeros and ones. That's not true. There's a lot of decimal places and a lot of gray zones. But how do we get to those juicy connections that we're all craving?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so many things. And I think a lot of them boil down to vulnerability. What keeps so many of us from making those connections is we don't want to be hurt again. We don't want to be let down again. And so then we stop trying because we're scared. So, you know, my biggest starting point for people is to take that leap of vulnerability that we don't want to take. you know, where, and I, you know, a lot of the advice that people get where it's like, people do tend to think in that very binary, like, well, where should I go? Where's the one place? It doesn't exist. Don't listen to anybody who tells you it exists.
Amen.
Are the shitty advice givers will be like, go here. That's when you make friends. Are you kidding? If that was true, no one would ever feel lonely ever. That's ever. Someone's like, you know, doing some weird thing, but it is. Wherever you are, maybe it's someone in your exercise class who you always sit next to and you see them every day and you don't want to be weird or you don't want to be. What if that is somebody you could have a connection with? Start small, but these moments of vulnerability, somebody you see at the grocery store all the time and you always like running into them, meeting yourself where you are, where you're at, because, you know, one of the biggest things that I hear and the other thing that I will say is, I hear so many people say like, I'm going to these meetup groups and I'm doing this. And whenever I hear people say that, this happened on book tour, like a couple months ago, and someone stood up in the audience and was like, I'm doing all these things. I'm doing everything right. And I was like, can I ask you a question? Like, are you like exhausted? Cause you sound exhausted. And she was like, yeah, I am. I don't believe it should be like that, because that feels so horrible. Like, because you're like constantly being vulnerable and like feeling this need to like, I need to find somebody to love me and someone to love is so painful. I've been there many times. There's no judgment here, But sometimes realizing maybe you're not at a place where you can open yourself up again. And that, and then dealing with those feelings, because we do, we want love and acceptance and friendship. We deserve those things. But if you are hearing me say, like, be vulnerable, talk to this person at the grocery store, and you're like, oh, I don't know if I can do that again, then don't. I don't believe in this sort of drill sergeant. Well, you got to do it. You got it. You don't have to do shit. Like, until you're ready. Maybe you're still healing from a friend breakup. Maybe you're still terrified. Maybe you wouldn't be picking good people right now anyway.
Yeah.
So kind of trusting. That's kind of why I called it. You will find your people. Not you will find your people if you do everything right and you're working hard and putting in the hours. No, you'll find them whenever it's your time. Keep being vulnerable. Let yourself rest. Allow whatever season of your life you're in. Maybe you're in winter right now and shit is shut down.
You got to hibernate.
That's okay. Allow ourselves to. But, you know, then we have to deal with the layers of shame and comparison. And okay, then maybe right now that's what your focus is how do I shed these expectations of I have to have friends by this age or this date or before my wedding? How do we let go of that? Because that's not going to be the best time for us to connect anyway.
When we're yeah, absolutely. And I want to quickly come back to the word vulnerability. Yeah. And I think we talk a lot about this. And what I think you're saying, Lane, when you're saying being vulnerable in the grocery store, it just means having a conversation with somebody saying, wow, you like Fruity Pebbles? Me too. That's amazing. It's not being vulnerable in sharing
trauma dumping.
Darkness.
Yeah.
Right. No. And I think that people sometimes have a problem understanding that, well, in order for me to be vulnerable, should I be like, hey, Fruity Pebbles lady, I just got broken up with by my best friend.
No.
That's crazy. Can't hide for more than 15 minutes. That's crazy. That is right. Vulnerability without boundaries is just oversharing.
Right. And that's really what it is, you know, it's, I always compare it to opening a door. You're opening a door. If the other person wants to walk in, oh my gosh, maybe you have a friend. That's the beginning. If you open the door and the person's like, okay, have a good day. Not for me. And maybe it's not a personal rejection. They're just not looking for friends. They're busy. They're tired, whatever it is. You open the door. They didn't walk through it. Great. That's not your person. That's okay. But don't stop. A lot of us, and you know, I've been there so many times, stop opening the door because we don't want to feel rejected. And so I use the word vulnerability because we could be rejected. We could open that door and the person's like, nope. And that feels bad, but it doesn't have to feel bad. We can kind of talk ourselves down and be like, okay, that wasn't my person. That's okay. I tried. That was a nice interaction. Maybe
I was brave.
I think that's
it's about being brave. It's about saying, oh my gosh, you like Fruity Pebbles, me too. Wow. Give yourself a brave point at the end of the day. Right. And that for you, it might be, and I just want us to distinguish when we're talking about what to do. It's about having that brave moment. And like you're saying, you're not always going to feel brave, and that's okay. And we shouldn't feel brave all the time, but one day you might feel like, wow, you know, I'm feeling myself today. I'm feeling a little brave, and I'm going to strike up a conversation with that person who's at my Soul Cycle class. Great. And it doesn't have to be anything besides, wow, I really like your leggings.
Right.
I just wanted you to know that. That's it.
And maybe, and it doesn't have to be like, I think people get so obsessed with like, what's the right way, whatever. Again, you're just opening a door. You're opening a door of conversation where you haven't talked before and now you have. Or, you know, sometimes I've been in one of my exercise classes and I'm like, you know, I was like, that last one was insane. And another person's like, right? I was struggling with that. I'm like, yeah, I know. And I'll be like, you know, I'm Lane, blah, blah, blah. Have a good day. That's it. You've opened a door. Now, maybe next time you go in, they talk to you again. Maybe it builds, maybe it doesn't. But it's just
okay.
These little pathways that might go somewhere, but they'll sure as hell go somewhere if you do that, as opposed to if you never did it, because maybe the other person's too scared to, and they're so glad you did.
Absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, dear listeners, what this comes down to again is the first thing we talked about in the beginning. Know yourself and know what you need in your friendships and your romantic relationships. And that in and of itself should give you peace. It's not what I should have. Don't should all over yourself, right? It's like, okay, if I'm anxious and I need someone who wants to text me 47 times a day because that just feels good, whether it's a friend or a romantic partner, it's okay to want that and it's okay to need that because that's who you are. It doesn't mean, well, I should be that girl that's like, oh, I don't want to hear from them for like 2 or 3 days. If that's not you, own yourself. I need to hear from you 47 times a day. Put it on a t-shirt. Just kidding. But find someone who will love you the way lights loves Lane, the way you want to be loved as a friend or a romantic partner. Accept yourself, and that's where it begins.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's then the greatest thing is when you see those little examples of like, oh, that's possible. These little glimmers of hope, like, oh, this person is giving me what I need and is okay with the fact that I've set these boundaries or these expectations. And you start to realize it's possible, but you start that within yourself by telling yourself that it's okay to want, and then other people reflect that's okay to want. And you just keep expanding with like, oh, this is great. This is safe. This is okay. I'm okay.
Oh, I love that. This was such a great conversation. I feel better for having talked to you.
Thank you so much. That's what I want. That's what I want for all of us. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, that's amazing. So thank you for taking time out of your schedule. I hope that when you come to Chicago with Tinder Live, you personally tell me so I can round up. I mean, I've got smart daters in every city in the country. Yeah. So dear listeners, look up, where can we find when Tinder Live is?
Yeah. So lanemoore.org is my website. Also on social media, I'm at Hello Lane Moore on Instagram and TikTok and all that stuff. And so I post my tour dates there. I don't know when this is airing, but I do it every month in New York City. I'll be in San Francisco later this month, and I'll have a bunch of new tour dates later this year. And I love coming to Chicago. So,
oh my gosh, I'm here. I can't wait. So thank you again for all of this, for being you. And I can't wait to have you on again and to meet you at Tinder Live in Chicago.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Chicago is such a fun, wild city to drive through. So yes, I'm in.
It's berserk. All right. Yeah. All right. Smart daters, if you like this episode, give us a like, give us a rating. We love that. And if you are ready to transform your dating life, remember, reach out to us at smartdatingacademy.com. You don't have to do this alone. And if you're in it to find meaningful relationships, that is what we do from A to Z for the last 15 years. We've had zero divorces. So can't beat that track record. So with that, I wish you an amazing week. Until next week. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.